This is Sparks from Radiofax, 6205 and 12255. We'd love to hear from you. Write and tell us something about yourself and what you do. Now, I rashly promise to give you a mention on this programme and hope to be flooded with mail. Our address is Sparks, Radiofax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG. We're running a weekly unlicensed radio feature, and we'd need your help. Please send in reports of pirate radio stations that you might have heard recently. Shortwave, FM or medium wave are all welcome, and they'll be compiled into a weekly spot, hopefully. If you'd like a reply to your letter, which includes a station card, technical information and an artist's impression of the transmitter site, please send 50 pence, 3 international reply coupons, or $1 to Sparks, Radiofax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG. Something I really shouldn't have to tell you at your age. It's Radiofax, Sparks. I'm playing that one for the other professor, my namesake Ian. That's his favourite record. Continuing.
East Germany, a hard nut to crack. From International Broadcasting, Andrew von Gamm discovers East Germany's broadcasting revolution stuck in the mire. The trouble with East German broadcasting, said one exasperated East German programme director, is West German broadcasting. And in that short phrase, he was able to sum up the frustrations that nearly all his fellow workers are feeling. What is annoying broadcasting folk so much is that they see themselves being denied the opportunities they thought they would get with reunification. When the wall fell, people from all sides of the television industry welcomed the new freedoms and the perceived business opportunities. It was very difficult in those heady days to not be over-optimistic. Equipment and services suppliers in particular grasped what they saw as the opportunity of a lifetime to enter the East German market. The reality, as always, has been somewhat different. Elke Fischer, owner of Lake People, a maker of broadcast audio equipment based near Lake Constance, said, "We were very optimistic at first and put a great deal of effort into setting up a sales organisation, which we have since closed down. What surprised us most was that we had difficulties understanding each other. They still do not comprehend the market economy or how it works." The broadcast market has had to suffer more than most because of an uncertain future. The relatively new Deutsche Fernsehfunk, DFF, successor to the communist-run GDR television, is to be wound up by the end of the year, and no one is quite sure what is to take its place. Even which broadcast standard is to be used, PAL, CCAM, or both, is still uncertain. But this problem is eased somewhat by the fact that nearly all domestic TV sets sold in Germany have for several years had dual PAL-CCAM reception. At first, DFF looked as if it would be allowed to continue as before. The new Director General, former dissident journalist Hans Bentzien, was at first remarkably successful in booking advertising. So the first batch of much-needed new equipment was ordered on the back of the proceeds. Until reunification, East German television had been making do with equipment so old that some of it has already been earmarked for museums. Most studio equipment was custom-made back in the 60s. Camcorders and other ENG equipment were almost completely unknown. Most outside broadcast work was done using unsynchronized 16mm film, a tape recorder, and a clapperboard. Getting raw film into the GDR was a problem. It was only available from the state monopoly supplier and could vary wildly in sensitivity and colour. High sensitivity and high resolution films were usually out of the question. Even today, outside broadcasts are still performed using a series of ancient East German and Soviet trucks. Cameras are transported in canvas-covered pickups. The cash from the first ads paid for 5 new Betacam editing suites, bought from Sony for 10 million Deutschmark, and a host of modern audio desks from George Neumann. At last year's Tonmeistertage, the sound engineering conference in Karlsruhe, the dozen or so engineers from East Germany were reported by many exhibitors as showing more interest in such new technologies as library cart automation and hard disk recording than their West German counterparts. If you haven't got an expensive installed base to build on, why not go for, or at least window shop for, the best available? Today, East German broadcasters face an uncertain future. Indeed, most of them probably face no future at all. 6,000 of the 9,000 employees at DFF will lose their jobs at the end of the year, when DFF is closed down. Of those, about half will go to a new station for northeastern Germany, Nordostdeutschen Rundfunk, NOR. Two West Berlin public stations face closure: Sender Freies Berlin, SFB, and Radio in the American Sector, RIAS. The fate of RIAS is still undecided, but all SFB staff will be taken on by NOR, a fact that has led to protest in the East. A new public broadcaster for the southern half of the former GDR, to be based in Leipzig, will also be taking over from DFF, but its structure has yet to be set in stone. This uncertainty has hindered the bonanza some may have been hoping for. With wild understatement, Sony Deutschland spokesman Thomas Isserger admitted, sales to Eastern Europe are going to require a great deal of commitment. That piece about developments in broadcasting in East Germany from International Broadcasting.
The Walk. Now, The Cure, at the beginning of the year, actually set up their own pirate radio station in association with one of the London pirates, and in a London tower block over Christmas time, they previewed their new album. They invited a load of journalists and made it into a sort of press event, which was reported in the papers. And I was very sceptical, but it did in fact happen. It would have been interesting to hear. I'll have to tune around and see what's going on in London this afternoon, because Sparks from Radio Facts comes from a secret location in London. Well, here's Electribe 101, Tell Me When the Fever Ended.
I'm and the shipment to go. 17 minutes after the hour, 5 o'clock on a Saturday evening.
Now me come with a new brand fashion, and everybody just run, come catch one, come and catch the ippity tonight. Watch me people me dance though, ippity amp, don't stop rock. When the sun a touch a bam bam boogie de bam, come dance.
Machine man, keep on the license, let's hear me.
So all of us do them, steer them, laying down the law on 93
FM. If them are the Mercedes-Benz, all of us steer them, steer the Oman them, steer them. If them are the 90s legend, imagine them bringing up a girl in the outside world.
That's a quick blast of Power Jam FM, which can currently be heard in London. So, the ghosts in the machine. Has the modern tape recorder provided evidence of survival after death? Thousands of voices purporting to be those of the dead have been recorded, and there is no rational explanation for their origin. What are we to make of them? Frank Smith investigates. Thomas Alva Edison was one of the greatest practical scientists of the 19th century. His achievements included the perfection of the duplex telegraph, the invention of the phonograph, and the introduction into the United States of the first electric light. In 1882, his generating station brought electric street lighting to New York for the first time, and 12 years later his moving picture show, which he called his Kinetoscope Parlor, was opened in the city. Despite these solid successes, however, an interview he gave to the Scientific American in 1920 caused concern among his contemporaries, some who must have thought that the 73-year-old inventor had lapsed into senility. What he proposed in the issue of 30th of October was no less than an instrument for communicating with the dead. Quote, "If our personality survives, then it is strictly logical and scientific to assume that it retains memory, intellect, and other facilities and knowledge that it acquires on this earth. Therefore, if personality exists after what we call death, it is reasonable to conclude that those who leave this earth would like to communicate with those they have left here. I'm inclined to believe that our personality hereafter will be able to affect matter. If this reasoning be correct, then, if we can evolve an instrument so delicate as to be affected or moved or manipulated by our personality as it survives in the next life, such an instrument, when made available, ought to record something." Edison worked on the development of such an instrument, but was unsuccessful. However, in the opinions of many modern scientific researchers, his views were apparently vindicated in the summer of 1959. At that time, a celebrated Swedish painter, musician, and film producer named Fredrik Jörgensen took his battery-operated tape recorder out into a remote part of the countryside near his villa in order to record birdsong. Playing the tapes back later, Jürgensen found not only bird sounds, but faint human voices, speaking in Swedish and Norwegian, and discussing nocturnal birdsong. Despite the coincidence of subject matter, Jürgensen first thought that he had picked up a stray radio transmission. On repeating the experiment, however, he heard further voices, this time addressing him personally, and claiming to be dead relatives and friends of his. Over the next few years, working from his home at Mölndö near Stockholm, Jürgensen amassed the evidence that he was to present in his book Voices from the Universe in 1964. This proved sufficiently convincing to attract the attention of the eminent German psychologist Professor Hans Bender, director of the government-funded parapsychological research unit at the University of Freiburg, who in turn set up a team of distinguished scientists to repeat the experiments and analyse the results. Their findings can be summarised as follows: that, under differing conditions and circumstances, a factory clean tape, run through an ordinary tape recording head in an otherwise silent environment, will contain human voices speaking recognisable words when played back. That the origin of these voices is apparently inexplicable in the light of present-day science, and that the voices themselves are objective in that they yield prints in the same way as normal voices and register as visible oscilloscope impulses on videotape recordings. The implications of these voices from nowhere are enormous. Dr. Bender himself is reported to consider them of more importance to humanity than nuclear physics. The very least, he concluded in a paper for Parapsychology Review, the paranormal origin of the phenomena is highly probable. Other scientists beside Dr. Bender were to become fascinated by Jurgensen's odd discovery. Dr. Konstantin Rodive, former professor of parapsychology at the universities of Uppsala and Riga, was living in Bad Kroningen, Germany, when he heard of the Jurgensen-Bender experiments in 1965. A former student of Carl Jung, Dr. Rodive had been forced to flee from native Latvia when it was invaded and annexed by the Soviet Union in 1945. Since then, he has become well known as a writer on experimental psychology.
Tears. lesson, heard my love, the bang on the ear. Crystal was a rover from Canada, she hailed. We crossed swords in San Francisco, we both lived to tell the tale. I don't know now where she is, oh, but if I had her here, I'd give her my love and a bang on the ear. Sleeping, I sense the dream that does unfold like gold. You to me are treasure, you to me are dear. So I'll give you my love and a bang on the ear.
Dr. Rodivé too began recording tests on the mysterious voices with conspicuous success, and between 1965 and his death in 1974, in partnership with physicist Dr. Alex Schneider of St. Gallen, Switzerland, and Theodor Rudolf, a specialist in high-frequency electronic engineering, he made over 100,000 tapes under stringent laboratory conditions. An exhaustive analysis of his work was published in Germany in the late 1960s, under the title The Inaudible Made Audible. This caught the attention of British publisher Colin Smythe, who later brought out an English language edition entitled Breakthrough. Peter Bander, who wrote the preface to the book, later gave an account of how he first heard a strange voice on tape. This nicely illustrates what happens as a rule, and also points out the objective nature of the phenomenon. Colin Smythe had bought a new tape and had followed Dr. Rodivé's instructions on how to contact the voices. A certain rhythm resembling a human voice had been recorded, but it was unintelligible to Mr. Smith. Peter Bander played the relevant portion of tape over two or three times, and suddenly became aware of what the voice was saying. It was a woman's, and it said, "Mach die Tür mal auf," German for "open the door." Mr. Bander immediately recognised the voice as that of his dead mother. He had been in the habit of conducting his correspondence with her by tape recording for several years before she died. And the comment was apt. His colleagues often chided him for being unsociable, for shutting his office door. Startled, Mr. Bander asked two people who did not speak German to listen to the tape and write down what they heard phonetically. Their versions matched what he had heard exactly. Peter Bander was convinced of the authenticity of the voices. Since the publication of Breakthrough in 1971, serious research has begun in all parts of the world. The interest of two very different bodies reflects the spiritual and temporal aspects of the voices. The Vatican has shown a great deal of off-the-record awareness of the phenomena, and a number of distinguished Catholic priest scientists have conducted experiments of their own. Preeminent among the first of these researchers was the late Professor Gerhard Free, an internationally recognized expert in the fields of depth psychology, parapsychology, and anthropology. Dr. Frey was the cousin of the late Pope Paul VI, the pontiff who, in 1969, decorated Friedrich Jürgensen with the Commander's Cross of the Order of St. Gregory the Great, ostensibly for documentary film work about the Vatican. But Jürgensen told Peter Bander in August 1971 that he had found a sympathetic ear for the voice phenomenon in the Vatican. The interest of NASA came to light in the late 1960s, when two American engineers from Cape Kennedy visited Dr. Roddyvay at Bad Consington. The visitors examined Dr. Roddyvay's experiments minutely and asked many unusually pertinent questions, as well as making helpful comments. They refused, unfortunately, to give the scientist any indication of what relevance the voice phenomena might have to the American space program. But, as Dr. Roddyvay realized, if he could achieve clear and regular results on his relatively simple equipment, just how much more likely was it that the sophisticated recorders carried in spacecraft should pick up the voices? From whatever source they spring, Jürgensen's voices from the universe represent a new field in the study of the paranormal. In a moment, I shall tell you how you can try recording your own voices. From the Unexplained. Has the modern tape recorder provided evidence of survival after death? Thousands of voices purporting to be those of the dead have been recorded, and there is no rational explanation for their origin. What are we to make of them? Frank Smith investigates. Recording the voices yourself. An ordinary cassette tape recorder can be used to record electronic voices, but generally speaking, the better the equipment, the more satisfactory the results. Machines with volume, tone, and level controls make the task of deciphering the voices on playback much easier, and a good set of headphones is essential. Experts agree that the hours between sunset and sunrise are the best time for experiments. Most researchers prefer to work in a quiet room, although a portable tape recorder in a quiet place in the countryside can yield good results, as Jurgensen proved. Rodivet recommended that the date and time should be spoken into the microphone before each session, followed by an invitation to the voices to speak. Each recording session should be no longer than 2 minutes, as intense concentration is needed in listening to the playback of the voices. Three basic recording methods are most likely to be of use. With the first, the tape recorder is switched simply to record, then questions are asked aloud and noted on paper. With the second method, preliminary announcements are made through a microphone, which is then unplugged, and a radio attached to the recorder instead. The radio is tuned in between frequencies into a band of white noise, and the recording level is set midway between maximum and minimum. The third method involves the use of a diode receiver, a small crystal set that is plugged into the microphone socket of the tape recorder. The recording level is set at maximum. According to Rodivet, diode recording gives the best results, the voices being slower, clearer, and more natural. Well, I invite you to try this. If you fancy recording some voices, I would be fascinated to hear any results. If you would send me a cassette, if you have any results, I will play them on this programme. It's Sparks from Radio Facts, a weekly programme of technical news and features on 6205 and 12255. If you'd like to write to us and tell us some more, you know, mundane stuff about yourself, please do. The address is Sparks, Radio Facts, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG, and I'll certainly read out some of your comments and give you a mention on air. If you'd like a reply to your letter, which includes a station card, technical information, and an artist's impression of the transmitter site, please send 50 pence, 3 international reply coupons, or $1 to Sparks, Radio Facts, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG. Now, I come from near Kingston in Surrey, and here's a band that used to play live a lot around there. They're called The Cardiacs, and this is a rather interesting record. It's called Big Ship. Sparks from Radio Fax 6205 and 12255. Fresh Radio Fax programs start on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday.
From Electronics Times, Valley Currents. Interactive Home Systems, a startup founded and owned by Microsoft chief William Gates, has purchased the rights to display digitized images of thousands of paintings and other artworks on a high-definition video display. The displays range from 40 to 70 inches across, and Gates is putting an advanced 150 inches prototype into the private movie theatre of the huge 50,000 square feet home he is building in Seattle. The home will be the main test ground for the technology, with displays built into the walls of its rooms and halls. In planning for Gates Palace, architects have allowed for 5-foot spaces between walls to allow him to upgrade to the latest video and computer technologies. From a central computer system, Gates will be able to select from thousands of pieces of art and choose which he wants to have displayed in which room or hall. The IHS library will contain more than 10,000 pieces, allowing subscribers an almost endless number of possibilities in decorating their homes and businesses, and to easily and constantly change works of art as they please.
Keep your This is a journey into sound. This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new value.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume.
Pump that bass.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin from our on-the-spot passport.
Oh my gosh. The music just turns me on.
Thinking of a master plan.
Death with the record. Death with the record.
Thinking of a master plan.
Death with the record. Death with the record.
Thinking of a master plan. This ain't nothing but sweat inside my hands. So I dig into my pocket, all my money spent. So I get deep up, still coming up with lint. So I start my mission, leave my residence. Thinking how could I get some dead presidents. I need money, I used to be a stick up kid. So I think of all the devious things I did. I used to roll up, this is a hole up. Ain't nothing funny, stop smiling. We still don't nothing move but the money. But now I learn to earn cause I'm righteous. I feel great, so maybe I might just search for a 9-to-5. If I thrive, then maybe I'll stay alive. So I walk up the street, whistling this. Feeling out of place, cause man, do I miss a pen and a paper, a stereo, a taper. Me and Eric being a nice big plate of fish, which is my favorite dish. But without no money, it's still a wish. Cause I don't like to dream about getting paid. So I dig into the books of the rhymes that I made. So now it's a test to see if I got pulled. Hit the studio, cause I'm paid in full.
One, two, three,
By George, even London grooves.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume.
Wait a minute, you better talk to my mother.
Station of Fam, 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 Station of Fam,
Currently listening to Station FM, brought to you through Sparks from Radio Fax 6205 and 12255. Let's see if they say anything. This is live in London, Pirate Radio.
Now this
is Station FM.
Station FM.
Station FM.
Station FM.
Thank you.
Station FM. Station.
Thank you. Thank you. Many thanks going out to the Lovers King Roy Medallion. Oh, absolutely splendid. 9 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock. Oh yeah. Before I forget, do remember catch the Lovers King Roy Medallion tonight down here at the Dougie's Night Spot alongside DJ Phil. I do believe Roy. Yes. Right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Isn't it? Yeah. That's right. That's right. Many thanks going out to the Lovers King Roy Medallion. Roy Medallion, absolutely splendid stuff. He's making me laugh here. Absolutely splendid stuff, Roy. I'm catching back. When are you back again, Roy?
Friday.
He'll be back again. Oh, next week, Friday night. What's that, 11 till 1?
Yes.
Yeah, 11 till 1. Check him out, the Lovers King original tune, man, tune. Okay, 9 minutes after the hour of 6, we cruise on. Andy B with you up until the hour of 8 o'clock tonight. Lots going on around London tonight. And also, we have some wicked music in store for you inside.
The Blackness.
Well, if I go tuning down the band, we'll see what we can find. This is currently 101 FM.
Lock it to the biggest of the best, Station FM 101.5. Andy B in the hot chair. Right up until the hour of 8 tonight. And we're going to have some fun.
Just you and me.
That's Kiss FM.
Rob 7.
Radio 1.
Carmen Jones.
LBC. Choice FM, that's an incremental in London. GLR.
That's 2 weeks ago.
Radio 4. BBC, and we should find round 92. Yeah. Another pirate. Let's see what this is. No, that is Radio 2. Where have they gone? Let's have a look for them.
pages of annotation.
Oh, well, there was a pirate there earlier on. That was the one I played about a few minutes ago. So, it appears they have disappeared. Sparks from Radio Fax, and here's Green Onions. Environmentally friendly motive power systems from Design Engineering. Ozone and greenhouse effects will require even stricter reductions in emissions and consumption of fossil fuels. Professor P. Walser of Vox Volkswagen in Wolfsburg, Germany, discusses some of the possible answers. Some of the environmental problems relating to engines include smell and noise in city areas, smoke and ozone build up in densely populated areas subject to high levels of solar irradiation and low air movement, and worsening of the global greenhouse effect due to increased levels of gases such as methane and carbon dioxide. These problems already exist, but it may be expected that they will be increased in urgency in the future. The question today is not how long the supplies of fossil fuels will last, but how long we will be permitted to use them. An enquete commission of the Federal German Parliament is pressing for a reduction in fuel consumption of 20% by 2005 and of 50% by 2050. To achieve this, another fuel tax could be introduced. A similar measure is under discussion in the USA in respect of the CAF standards which apply there. In the USA, particularly in California, the formation of ozone layers is frequently exceeding the tolerable limits. In conjunction with dust particles, smog is formed. To reduce this, the hydrocarbon and nitrous oxide limits are to be further tightened. The particle emission limit is so low, at 0.08 of a gram per mile, that diesel engines cannot currently meet them. The most effective engine and efficient is the diesel, which even in its present form emits 25% less carbon dioxide than the spark ignition engine. To enhance its acceptability, Volkswagen has been offering the so-called Catalyst diesel since autumn 1989. This diesel engine has turbocharging and, for the first time, an oxidation catalyst. The turbocharger ensures a sufficiency of air, which means that fewer particles of soot are produced and the smoke can no longer be seen. The new type of catalyst oxidizes in the exhaust flow a large proportion of the aromatic polycyclic hydrocarbons, with the result that a smaller quantity of these substances absorbs on the soot particles and the exhaust smell is notably reduced too. Hydrocarbon emissions are reduced to a quarter and carbon dioxide to an eighth of those from a conventional diesel engine. However, diesel engines alone will not achieve the overall carbon dioxide emission levels of the future. Savings must also be made with the petrol engine. Concepts aiming in this direction are variable valve timing and variable compression. On a new stratified charge engine, fuel is injected direct into the combustion chamber and ignited by a spark plug. An engine of this kind works without a throttle, and because of the stratified charging with high excess air, the compression ratio can be increased to 16. The nitrous oxide emission is low on account of the high excess air. Charging is primarily directed at ensuring this excess air over the whole operating range. An oxidation catalyst is important to minimise hydrocarbon emission. Installed in a Golf, a charged DI petrol engine of 1.7 litres cubic capacity achieves the same performance as a normally aspirated spark ignition engine of the same size. The fuel saving is 25%, making consumption nearly on the level of the swirl chamber diesel engine. It meets US emission limits and no particulates are formed. Output and noise lie between the figures for conventional spark ignition and diesel engines. How far fuel consumption, pollutant emission and noise can be reduced by the advanced technology is shown by the engine of the experimental Eco Polo. A very small two-cylinder engine was selected to minimise friction losses. On this direct injection diesel, a G charger provides sufficient output, being switched in by a form of kickdown. Other components are charge air cooling and engine map controlled exhaust recirculation. The vehicle has an inertia utilization system, which cuts the engine out when the accelerator is not depressed and first gear is not engaged. Under these conditions, it freewheels. A filter is employed to reduce particulate emissions. Regeneration is ensured on the one hand by a fuel additive, and on the other by operation of the small engine at high loads. The iron oxide ferrosen was selected as a fuel additive in an admixture of 1 part to 2,500. The ferrosen is deposited as oxygen bearer, with the soot lowering the ignition temperature by 80 degrees C. The small size of the engine, which is cut out in overrun, results in an exhaust gas temperature 100 degrees C higher. These two measures ensure that the filter is regenerated with sufficient frequency. In exhaust emissions, particulate values are achieved which are as low as those of the spark ignition engine. Because of the engine encapsulation, noise levels are reduced to the tyre noise level of 71 dB A weighted. This experimental vehicle can thus already meet the requirements of an urban vehicle and exhibits extremely low carbon dioxide emission levels.
Works well. Dream the dream by the old canal. I kiss my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Clouds are dread across the moon. Cats are proud
there be? Springs a girl from the streets at night. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Smoky wind, dirty old town, dirty old town. I'm gonna make me a picture box, shining steel, tempered in the fire. I'll chop you down. Met my love by the gasworks wall, dreamed a dream by the old canal. I kissed my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Dirty old town, dirty old town.
Environmentally friendly motive power systems from Design Engineering. Reformulated gasolines are proposed which contain fewer aromatics, and this reduces the reactivity of the emitted hydrocarbons. Methanol has similar characteristics. The EPA and the California Air Research Board therefore regard methanol as a cleaner fuel of the future. For this reason, beginning 1994, an increasing number of passenger cars are to be registered for this fuel in California. It cannot be denied, however, that there are scientists of repute who doubt these positive effects of methanol on the quality of the air. The initial strategy is for the engines to tolerate mixtures ranging from pure petrol to 85% methanol. This means that injection and timing have to be fully variable, and a sensor is required to indicate mixture to the control unit at any given moment. Still critical is the fuel sensor, and the question of whether it is possible to reduce formaldehyde emission to below the new target value of 0.015 grams per mile. These engines would largely correspond to current direct injection diesel engines, although a glow plug or similar device would be needed for ignition. With current technology, the conversion of natural gas into methanol produces as much CO2 as the production of petrol from mineral oil. However, if engines can be optimized to run on pure methanol, the emission will be reduced in line with increased efficiency. It is frequently debated as to what extent biomass, which can be regenerated annually, could be used as an engine fuel. Biomass would have the advantage of a closed-loop carbon cycle. The carbon dioxide released by combustion in an engine is re-assimilated by the plant during growth. In European conditions, rapeseed oil is the most interesting possibility. However, before rapeseed oil can be introduced as an engine fuel, certain technical and political questions have to be answered. The former include the higher viscosity of engine oil. If pure rapeseed oil is to be used in diesel engines, either special engines will be needed, or methyl ester must be produced from the rapeseed oil, and this could then be used in ordinary engines. Another solution which seems feasible would be the admixture of up to 10% rapeseed oil to diesel fuel. In any case, the agricultural production of rapeseed oil is much more expensive than mineral oil, which would make considerable subsidies necessary. It must ultimately be considered, in the face of growing worldwide food problems, how long agriculturally usable land can be used for full-fuel production. A drive concept from which a great deal is expected in terms of all three objectives, city requirements, smog, and carbon dioxide emissions, is an engine for which an additional clutch between engine and flywheel can be activated, the flywheel itself taking the form of a 6-kilowatt induction motor. In operation, the first third of the accelerated travel will control the electric motor. This would handle the greater part of urban operation. But when the accelerator is further depressed, the clutch engages the flywheel motor with the combustion engine, and this is restarted within one revolution. In conclusion, a look at the prospects for hydrogen and electrical energy, two alternatives which are constantly cited as the most convincing energy types for the future. Drive concepts with these energies have been realised and have been shown that the right circumstances they can indeed work in an environmentally very acceptable fashion. Their disadvantages, at least at the current state of technology, are their storage ability and recharging times. The result is that operating ranges are low and long refuelling times must be accepted. More significantly, however, both energies can only be won at the expense of a high energy input. In view of the current debate on nuclear energy, it is unlikely that only solar energy remains for serious consideration. However, major technical breakthroughs can only be expected in the course of the first third of the next millennium. That was Environmentally Friendly Motive Power Systems by Professor P. Walser of Volkswagen from Design Engineering. Now, talking about pollution, Andy Bradgate has just taken his socks off. Now, can you explain why your feet are so smelly?
No.
How many days have you worn those socks non-stop?
Two.
Two. I don't believe you. Does anyone believe him? You should smell these socks. They are unreal.
Nice.
No, no, they're not.
Nice.
No.
You got a nice little body. A nice little mind. You're a nice little person with a nice behind. Yeah. Average house. Average car. Average wife. Should go far. Got a nice little family in a nice little street. You go out on a Sunday for a nice little treat. Average dog. Average cat. Average this. Average that.
You're on the average.
nice part of town. You got a nice secretary in a nice wedding gown.
Average jock, average Jill, average jock, average Jill. Average cat. Average nice.
That's Ian Dury with Box of Frogs, Average. And we've now got three out of four of the Sparks team. Prof Parker, Trevor Brook is not here. Ruth Phillips has just come in. Shay, say hello. She's fighting with me at the moment. Come on, say hello. So, come on, you can speak. One word. Oh, please, she's run off. And, of course, Andy Bradgate. So, we're on 6205 and 12255. Our address is Sparks, Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG. Come here, don't hide over there. No. If you'd like a reply to your letter, which includes a station card, technical information and an artist's impression of the transmitter site, please send 50 pence, three international reply coupons or $1 to Sparks, Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG. Another feature we're going to be having regularly is Auntie Ruth's Problem Spot. If you write in with your personal, emotional or sexual problems, Auntie Ruth will answer them for you on air. So get writing to the address Sparks, Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG, and she'll be delighted to hear from you and will read any letter from you out on air and always give you a mention. Continuing, Jack LaFreak from Chic.
Aww, freak out! LaFreak, say chic, freak out! Aww, freak out! LaFreak, say chic, freak out! Aww, freak out! LaFreak, say chic, freak out! Aww, freak out! LaFreak, say chic. Sure you'll be amazed. Big fun to be had by everyone. It's up to you. Surely it can be done. Young and old are doing it, I'm told. Just one try and you too will be sold. It's called a freak. They're doing it night and day. Allow us, we'll show you the way. Freak out!
This is Sparks from Radio Facts, and from an interesting book, Radio is My Bomb, a DIY manual for pirates. We're going to reenact a transcript from Radio Arthur. From July 1984, breaking in on top of the news bulletin of Radio Trent, an ILR station in Nottingham.
Coal, Grandad? What's coal?
Coal's what's made this country the workshop of the world. From coal, we've built an empire. We've fought two world wars and won. We exported coal all over the world. We had the finest coal industry in the world and the finest miners.
But, Grandad, what happened?
I'll tell ye that, the lad. Now, as I recall, a Tory government got into power and then the greedy fool closed down the pits, destroying the mining villages, and sold off best pits to highest bidder. In end, there was nought left to the mining industry. It were a terrible and shameful waste of the nation's best assets. It were absolutely terrible, terrible shame.
Mr. Openshaw, wake up, Mr. Openshaw. You've been dreaming.
Dreaming? That were no bloody dream. That were a nightmare. Comrades, don't let your coal industry become a thing of the past. Join the strike now, and never forget that today's blacklegs are tomorrow's dole queues. There was then a bit of a stuff like choir music. Oh, choir music! It is not the normal practice of this radio station to read extracts from the newspapers, but this particular article has a special significance and highlights the real dangers of privatisation. There's an article from the Times newspaper. So, there you are. And from that time, the Times newspaper. This could well be the fate of the Nottinghamshire coal pits. Wholesale destruction of the industry. You have been warned. Join the strike now and help to fight against privatisation.
What happened to the authentic northern accent?
I'm sorry. There's some more music. This government is committed to destroying the NUM at any cost, and according to the City of London analyst Phillips Andrew, has spent £15 million a week so far. Truly amazing. Millions of pounds spent on smashing a trade union, while doctors turn away sick people from hospitals and in some cases send them home to die in misery for lack of money for the health service. Violins. I wouldn't trust these Tories to run a public lavatory. Glory, glory, hallelujah, please.
Glory, glory, hallelujah!
We were very pleased to see our brothers from Coughton Wood in Nottingham on Tuesday, August the 23rd. The men from Coughton Wood are marching to the TUC conference in Brighton. We wish them well and Godspeed. Welsh Choir. Welsh Choir.
Oh, sorry, Welsh Choir.
To the Nottingham working miners, I say this. If you want to save the pits, don't believe the lies that the coal board tells you. Don't believe the renegade strike breakers. Don't be fooled by what you see or hear on media. Listen to what your union tells you. We care about the mining industry, jobs, the future, and now is the time for you to join the strike. Glory, glory, hallelujah again, building two. His truth is marching on. That was a transcript from Radio Arthur. Thank you to Radio Is My Bomb for providing that. I think we'll be having Heavy Horses, Jethro Tull, next. This track is Rover.
Seven.